listening to the You're Smarter Than Us podcast, Asheville's premier soccer podcast. Guys, welcome back to another episode of You're Smarter Than Us. I'm here today with the soccer goose himself from Charlotte, North Carolina. How you doing, Ben?
I'm doing good. It's funny because whenever I'm introduced that way, it always makes me laugh because it's like a silly Twitter username that's just kind of gotten out of hand. It's pretty funny whenever I hear that introduction. But thank you for having me. It's good to.
Absolutely, man. Well, whenever you have your own soccer goose facts, hashtag, you're living the brand, man. And then if we're nothing else in 2019, we are our own brands. So I'm excited to have you on, Ben. I seriously don't know if there's many people in the state of North Carolina and in the state of South Carolina that know as much about the lower leagues as you do. And so I always love sitting down with you and kind of sitting under your learning tree and hearing your opinions, even if I don't agree with them, because they're well stated and absolutely well thought out. So thanks for taking time out of your day.
Yeah, glad to be here. It's I always love talking soccer. It's been an interesting, like, the trajectory of my like soccer fandom and what I've viewed of soccer and pro and amateur and that type of thing has been, it's definitely changed. I would say a lot recently. And it's all because of Asheville. It's Asheville's fault, really, in a way, in some respect. I say that jokingly, of course, but yeah, it's good to be here.
So let's just dive right in. I mean, no need to dilly-dally. So you and I were sitting on Twitter earlier this week, and I didn't realize it was a whole chain of them, but I guess there's these like AVL Today, 6 a.m. City newsletters that go out. Yeah. We've got one in Asheville that's kind of up and down in quality. I know they've got one in Chattanooga, and they've got one down in Greenville. And Greenville's GVL Today put out a short little, I don't know what it was, maybe 4 or 5 paragraphs long story that broke down the differences between the Triumph and GVL FC. And somewhere in that, there was a very black and white statement that just said, when you boil it down, GVL FC is amateur and Triumph is pro, and this is what that means. And you kind of took umbrage at that, and you said, you know, this doesn't encompass everything. And then there was a little back and forth and a little back and forth. But then you jumped in. You're like, this is a podcast. We got to chat about this. So what was it that you kind of, in reading that out, just grabbed you and was like, no, this isn't right. You can't fit this in that box.
It's hard for me to really where to begin. But the thing that really bothered me about it is the way it, and I'm gonna preface all this I don't want to say complaining, but this thought-provoking perspective with the fact that I know the publication isn't gonna dive into what NPSL is and what League One is and all these kinds of things, so I probably took it a little more not personally, but I honestly took offense to it, because you really can't look at both these clubs in any capacity and just say, oh, one is pro and one is amateur. Because I think when it comes down to it, the thing that really bothered me about labeling a club as pro as amateur is, and I'm going to explain all this, but it's not really something the club earns. It's something they're just given, in a way. Like, your owner has X amount of money, here's a pro club. Your owner has this amount of money, oh, you can only have an amateur club. Air quotes. And I've seen it from multiple different perspectives. I've been to a number of different games, and I've been to pro and amateur, and it's such a difficult thing, because I don't think amateur is a right way of describing Greenville FC. I don't believe. I haven't seen it as an amateur club, quite frankly. And I mean, to label a club in the NPSL as simply amateur, I think it's doing a disservice to the NPSL and Greenville FC, and really just to, I don't want to say labeling Triumph as pro is really doing a service to them too, because it's not diving into what that means, quite frankly. Because essentially what it comes down to, from my perspective, I'll say pro basically means they have a wider pool of players to gather. which is factual. Amateur means it's a smaller group of pool of players, but it's more locally sourced, I would think. And there's different ways of looking at that, and there's obviously a lot of ins and outs to that. But at the end of the day, what clubs, and you can even look at this from a perspective of in the MLS, because, I mean, you see the New England Revolution. They're a pro club, but are they?
The crowd they had in their stands yesterday would say otherwise.
Exactly. And it's like, I don't want to harp on clubs too much, but you saw just this past weekend two clubs in the USL Championship that are reserve sides for MLS teams that together had about 900 people in attendance. And that's for two separate games. And
Chattanooga had over 7,000.
Exactly. And it's a thing that bothers me because it really comes down to you're putting them in a box. And I would hate someone to look at that article at the end of the day that doesn't know soccer too well, because I've been in that point too. I've, quite frankly, to be honest with you, I've really only kept track of soccer for about 4 years now. Back in 2015, I went to my first ever game. And to be honest with you, I didn't know that it was pro, and I didn't care. It didn't make a difference in my experience. And ultimately, I'd hate for someone to see that article and just say, oh, okay, well, there's only one pro club in Greenville, so why would I care about the other one? Mm-hmm. Why would I invest in it and really get to know this other club? Because it's not pro. And I think ultimately, the other perspective I took from it is, if you look at that article, you can make the same comparison between the Greenville Triumph, who are technically a pro club, and compare them to Atlanta United. And it'd be a very similar argument. No one wants to hear that, though. But at the same time, it's such a difficult thing. I mean, I hate to harp on it too much, but and I kind of went back and forth with Marco on it, it's weird to put a club in a box, because there's so many different factors that come into play in what a club can be in the NPSL, quite frankly, and the ownership that's a part of that. And I've time and time again seen Greenville FC take the mantle and see, well, we're in the NPSL, but we want to be more than that. I mean, they're starting an academy in their second year. No one told them to do that. That's mm-hmm. not the NPSL saying, oh, you have to do this in your second year. That's Marco and the ownership group there saying, this is a need in the community. Let's do this.
Well, and I think there's something really interesting, too, about the pedantic argument of amateur versus pro, especially in the lower leagues, because the word professional is something to beat professional teams, paid players and clubs that are sanctioned through the Fed and meet those PLS. They use the professional standards and the sanctioning to beat the amateur clubs down. And I don't necessarily mean in like an insulting way. I just mean this is a differentiation. This is something that differentiates us between you and us. But at the same time, oftentimes what these amateur clubs are doing isn't too far removed from, you know, the college teams that they're sourcing their players from. You wouldn't necessarily call the game day experience at a lot of these single A or double A schools an amateur experience. They're still playing on FIFA regulation fields, and it's not your Sunday league. And I think that's where I get especially frustrated, because I think that's what a lot of the pro fans who, again, beat down on this, they're trying to equate it, that this isn't much different than your Sunday league, pub league, Wednesday night, just a bunch of buddies who actually have day jobs getting together and doing this. Are there NPSL sides, UPSL sides that are closer to that? Yes, of course. But you can't equate what Greenville's doing, what Asheville's doing, all the way up to everything the Founder Cups teams are doing, and compare it to that, because it's not even close. And you see it more and more when you see the amount of players that are being signed out of NPSL clubs. Are they college students? Yes, but this is also part of that growth. This is the result. NPSL exists because we don't have an actual academy system like they do in Europe. And so it has become this fourth, unofficial fourth tier. But to pigeonhole it as amateur is just ridiculous. You look at England, it's something like the seventh tier becomes semi-professional. So that their university rules are way, way different over there. But it's semi-professional. It's not amateur. Some of the players can be paid. Some of them can't be. In Germany, it's a fourth tier is semi-professional. Mm. NPSL is basically a semi-professional. And now with the Founders Cup coming in, it basically will be professional, sanctioned through the USASA, et cetera, et cetera. But that pedantic battle of trying to say that D3 USL is better than NPSL because of this, is it longer? Yes. Does it reach those PLS and therefore have, I don't know, theoretically nicer stadiums and better concessions? Even that's debatable. But I do think the pedantic battle of this is amateur and this is professional leads people down those roads to make assumptions about on the pitch quality and game day experience. Exactly. You hit it on the head with the academy. And, you know, it's so funny when people buy pottery, you know, if they love what they bought, it's worth what they're willing to pay for it. And where along the line does somebody get to decide whether it was made by a professional potterer or an amateur potterer? And that's kind of what sports truly, truly is. Yes, whenever you eventually get to NFL, NBA, yeah, I guess even to a certain degree, MLS, you're at the top of the top in the country. And yeah, you can basically say that's professional because these people are making a living basically only on that. But that's not the standards they're using, the USSF's using. They're saying these are subjective standards that we're asking you to meet to exist within our sanctioned pyramid.
Mm.
But you just said the game day experience you had, you didn't know if it was pro, you didn't know if it was amateur. And I'm willing to bet that the average person coming off the street, whether they go to a Nashville game, a Greenville game, or a Triumph game, I bet you they wouldn't really be able to tell either.
Yeah, and it's just something that, like, if you would have asked me a year or two after I was getting into soccer, I don't think I would have, it wouldn't have been something that was particularly meaningful to me. And I don't think it is now, just because I've seen multiple levels of soccer and I've seen different clubs in different regions of the Carolinas, essentially, too. I've been fortunate enough, to be honest with you, see different examples of what soccer is. And really, it's just, I think it comes down to community engagement, really. And I think, honestly, I've really loved the way the NPSL has built itself to be, because it's a league that can be for different types of clubs. And yes, they're going to, in a way, open themselves up to being for a club that's going to be a little bit more amateur. And but they're also going to leave themselves up to have the Chattanoogas of the world, and the Detroit cities of the world be a part of that, so that it's four different types of people. And I think something that's really changed for me in the perspective of that, whether it's pro or amateur, is like, who is it to say the USSF that a club, an owner that doesn't meet the requirement to be a top level pro organization shouldn't have a team in that city? Because I think at the end of the day, I don't want to live in a situation where the NPSL doesn't exist. Because ultimately, we'd be in a situation where Greenville FC doesn't happen, simply because the ownership group hasn't checked all the boxes that USSF has put forth for them. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense, what I'm saying?
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. And I think that's another fantastic point to make about what NPSL serves in the community. Mm-hmm. I think the amateur status and the way the NPSL to a degree runs with more regionalized and multiple, I mean, goodness gracious, what is there? 13, 14 divisions that they have. And actually in the Southeast, now that New Orleans has dropped out, the travel's been kind of truncated a little bit. But while New Orleans was in there, the Southeast was one of the most spread out in the country. But most of them, you know, you look at the Great Lakes up in New York, even on the West Coast to a certain degree, because they separated them to North California, South California. You're serving a smaller geographical radius. And yes, even within those geographical radiuses, you have your Detroit cities, but then also your, you know, FC Indianas. So you've got different levels of how serious you're taking it, but that's really, really something that's unique about soccer, that there is a home for all those different levels. And so in place of MLS and maybe like USL championships, sides, I mean, that, you know, they've hit these corporate barometers almost. Like they have to do this because if they don't hit 5,000-7,000 fans a game, how are they going to be able to afford to travel to what's Charlotte's furthest trip, away trip?
Our furthest trip is probably Ottawa, if I could guess.
And how many fans do you guys average home game?
Home games, I think it's about 1,600-1,700, to be honest with you.
Okay, so about what Asheville does, and how many home games a year do you guys have?
We have 17, if I'm not mistaken.
Okay, so that's clearly significant more. But whatever you're not making up in game day revenue, you're making up in corporate sponsorships. Okay, that's you're playing in the sandbox that you're playing in. You can't do anything about that. To play well in that sandbox, you have to have corporate support and you have to pay those masters. Okay, I just went down to the Greenville Triumph scrimmage against App State a couple weekends ago. And what they've got going on down there is pretty and it's shiny. And the thing that kind of caught my surprise, though, is on the other side of the pitch from below the press box and on the other side from the dugouts and kind of the big supporter stand, well, just the fan stand in general, is a double row of on-the-pitch seats, just front row and then back row. And it's very clear that those are basically for the bigwigs. Those are the ones who get their own separate concession stand that literally, I don't know if they physically had a velvet rope, but they might as well have a velvet rope to get into that section.
Yeah.
That's what they're having to do to get up off the ground and to play within that USL sandbox. Okay, that's fine. You're professional. That's the sort of master you have to pay. With what NPSL does, Chattanooga, Detroit, I'm going to kind of put the Cosmos and Miami FC in a separate box for this conversation. Asheville, Greenville, because you don't necessarily have to have separate accommodations and separate suites. And you know, it's fans are fans basically, you know, whether you're in Detroit, Chattanooga, Greenville, Asheville, all the way out to West. You can spend your money elsewhere. You can spend your attention elsewhere. Yes, you still have to get a sponsor on the front of your kit. You still have to get something on your advert hoardings. You still have to travel. You still have to do this. You still have to do that. But you can be a little more community-minded because you're not having to spend that time filling those on-the-pitch seats. It's what you're afforded. And when you're afforded that, you can exist for a specific reason. Ryan Allen brought up a fantastic point in our Slack about how certain clubs arise at certain points of times in response to something. It's not always just because a bunch of friends got together and wanted to create a soccer team. That's kind of what happened here in Asheville. And that's kind of what happened in Greenville to a certain degree. They saw a need and they wanted to put something there because they thought the time was right. But at the same time, as soon as they did, kind of like, the club that came out of Manchester when the Glazers bought Man U, the United Football Club of Manchester, it was a fan-owned club that rised up and said, we don't want American owners owning our club, so here's the fans of that club creating their own club. Celtic came up because of a Catholic father in response for like famine or something. That's not, Greenville Triumph did not rise up because it had a calling. They came in because they are an organization that puts together minor league sports clubs. that's fine. That's something that exists too. But if you're going to play in a professional sandbox, you have to play by those rules. And amateur clubs don't, and they can mold. When I talked to Dion with Detroit City, one of the things that really truly moved me and kind of bothers me that people, you know, they forget that Detroit City is not just loudmouths on Twitter, but the good they're actually doing in the community. I don't know that there's another football club doing everything that they're doing, between the youth clubs that they allowed to use their field house, the funding that they're doing to try to break the pay-to-play model, all the way up to the yearly games that they play for different, and yeah, I understand a lot of clubs are doing this now with the you know, one-off kits that end up getting auctioned off. Detroit was the first. When other clubs are auctioning off their kits, they're copying something Detroit started. The reason they're in Hamtramck is, you know, they moved to Keyworth to try to build that pitch up, but they're serving that community too. And it's a community that has something like 33 different nationalities within a 2-mile radius. They are what they are, and they are their community. That's not always something, especially in America, professional clubs do. We actually have to look towards those amateur clubs to see truly, truly clubs of the community.
Yeah, and it's interesting to think about that, because it almost, I mean, I'm essentially speculating at this point, but if you look at it from a perspective of all the boxes you have to check with a professional side, you have to allocate your funds in a certain type of way. And that puts you in essence, another type of box in some ways, because certain clubs aren't going to be able to, that aren't going to have the funds of a Tampa Bay Rowdies or a long established club, aren't going to be able to have the funds to do the community engagement and open up their fields like Detroit City is doing. And that's one thing that it's been really encouraging to see, that Detroit City is doing those types of things, and Asheville City is doing the Just Play initiative and things like that, that you don't see a lot of other clubs doing, honestly, whether they're pro or amateur. You just don't. And it's a really, I think ultimately it's just something that when you say a club is amateur, I think the biggest thing that bothers me about it is you're basically saying it comes across as a negative word. Mm-hmm. Oh, they're just an amateur club. Especially when you compare it to a pro club. When you say, like you said earlier, a black and white, oh, one is pro and one is amateur, there's so much more that goes into it with that. And I think it's a bigger picture, which is a whole nother topic, but I think it's, when you look at it now and you say pro clubs and amateur clubs in America, automatically when you think amateur, there's a lot of things that go along with that that aren't good, quite frankly. Mm-hmm. And when you see pro, it's like, oh, well, now it gives me something to be more inclined to participate in, be a part of. But honestly, and I think a lot of people have this perspective, it doesn't matter if you're pro or amateur, quite frankly. I'll say this, that I've been to a lot of pro clubs, I've been to a lot of amateur clubs. I've had the same experience in both places. I've met some amazing people that are running amateur clubs in America, in the Carolinas more specifically, that they don't care that it's not pro. They're trying to be in their community and fill a need through soccer. It's, yeah, I don't know.
It goes back to that unique quality that soccer has, you know. Mm-hmm. The closest thing that, you know, basketball is starting to develop a quote unquote minor league. It's still super rough. It's not really put together. I think even the professional ranks are just now kind of trying to figure out how best to use it after, goodness gracious, they've been trying for over 20 years. Hockey doesn't really have it, though they kind of do. Baseball obviously has the most well-established minor league system. But it's a very, very top down, you know, the clubs become associated with each of these minor league affiliates, basically, and you can move players up and down through them. Soccer is basically trying to create something like that. And it's a little, I don't know how to feel about it, because obviously in Europe, when you have the academy system, you can move players up through your own academy. In each of those U10s, U12s, U15s, U18s, you're playing in different tiers, but they're staying within the same system. When different clubs at different levels become affiliates of each other, you kind of become beholden to each other. And in the long run, you're beholden to the one cutting the biggest check at the top. And that becomes a little sticky and gross to me when you consider the power of what soccer could potentially be, which is one of those sports that, because no matter what your political ideology is, the fact is America is becoming more like the rest of the world. As the NFL and American football, you know, actual football becomes, I think, more like boxing, and it's going to become more of a niche sport as the violence and everything of that kind of comes to fruition. Soccer, I really, truly do believe, is the sport that's primed to kind of fill that spot. And that's because it is a melting pot sport. And so at all the different levels, it cuts across socioeconomic demographics, age. It cuts through a lot of those things that kind of divide us. And that works at an amateur level and a professional level. What really frustrates me, and I get a lot of flack for it in the Slack channel or on Twitter, and it's an argument that I think unfortunately gets co-opted by people who don't have as well thought of an argument as other people, is if it's going to function in that way as a uniter, as something that functions for the community as well for the businessmen, and one has to come before the other, I think the business community will come and support the lower leagues. It will support the idea of pro rel if they can see what it does for the community. But it has, the proof of concept has to come first. And as long as we continue to beat down the lower leagues, as long as we continue not to validify what these quote unquote amateur clubs are doing in the communities, the business communities aren't going to get behind it. And that's extremely, extremely frustrating to me, because we're cutting off our nose to spite our face as soccer fans.
Yeah, that's a good way of putting it. And it's just, it's an endless debate what pro means and what amateur means, and just an endless discussion. But it's something I've been thinking about a lot here recently, and even like just this past weekend, the Independents, which is I don't want to say the main club I support, but I was at a game that was probably the wildest game I've ever been to, and there was people I had never met before. There was people there, new people I've met recently. And no one was worried about what level we were at. I think it's just, there's something so connective about soccer that is, it doesn't have to do with amateur or pro, I don't think. And I mean, I've met you through soccer. Mm-hmm. Probably would have never met you. I mean, we have some other similar characteristics that may have eventually bound us together, but like, it's, I think when you put those types of things in boxes, it convolutes it for no reason. It waters it down, and I don't know that it's necessary. I get it from certain perspectives that there needs to be certain things in place so that there is a sustainable model, I suppose. But I don't think that's an end-all be-all for every type of city and every type of organization that's going to come up.
Yeah, there's a whole other debate about where the focus should be. Should the focus be on the clubs or the league? And that's another debate we'll certainly get into at another time. But I know you got to go soon, but I want to pick your brains on just a few kind of rapid-fire situations and happenings in the lower leagues. How do you picture this next year coming for Greenville between the Triumph and GVLFC?
Honestly, I think it'll go well. I think the move for Greenville FC to be in a different home and to be in a place that honestly probably wasn't their first pick to be at in their first year, I think is, it's a move that I believe will pay off. there are going to be some negatives that come along with that, to be honest with you. But there are things that are correctable. And I think, honestly, I think both will work together in the sense that if people continue to support both clubs, I think that's the biggest thing. Now, granted, it's a tough situation to be in because you can't pull people in two different directions, I don't think. Like, for me personally, I hate to say it, but I don't think I'm going to find – I know for a fact I'm not going to find myself supporting the Triumph as heartily as I have Greenville FC for a number of reasons, but ultimately because Greenville FC, there's been moments where, like, they've imprinted on me, in essence. Mm-hmm. A lot of – in that, it's just – it feels weird to do both those things. And I'm not going to say that's what everyone needs to do because everyone has their own opinion and live your life essentially. But I think both clubs can coexist, honestly. But I'm curious and I'm honestly really excited for the second year of Greenville FC because of their intentionality to work with the community with doing the academy that they're doing and continuing to progress as an organization.
What was your impression of how the Triumph have rolled out?
It's tough. I mean, it's been a mixed bag, to be honest with you. I've liked certain aspects of it, but to be honest with you, there's been a number of things here and there that have just... I don't love certain things about it, to be honest with you. I don't love, and it may be me combining with the fact of USL League One moving into Chattanooga, and I'm combining those two thoughts together. But to be honest with you, I just don't love that they're combined with that. I don't love that they're, and I understand this is an endless debate, but they're not the same. They were both forming their clubs at the same time, but it's such a tough discussion because I like what they're doing, but I don't, there's been definitely certain aspects of relying on the pro aspect of it. It's a tough situation. I haven't loved it, to be honest with you, though, just because there's been certain things that just have left a bad taste in my mouth in certain aspects.
No, and you're not the only one who said that. I mean, I do think the vast majority of the fans, it's just speaking to, completely neutral third parties who have just been really, really shocked and amazed at how Chattanooga kind of elicited one sort of response in that whole situation, the way that it developed, and Greenville has just diametrically been opposite. I don't actually know that I've met anyone who has just completely forsaken the Triumph. And again, I think that does absolutely have to do with the fact that they basically came up at the same time. The D3 announcement may have even happened within a couple months of Greenville FC actually coming up off the ground. And then, of course, the brand rollout and everything. I did go down, like I said, to that scrimmage a couple weekends ago to support my man Cameron Saul, who is going to be playing up top for the Triumph. If anybody knows of any sketchy European websites that allow me to place a bet on USL League One Golden Boots, let me know. And what they're doing down there at Legacy Early College, it's a very, very interesting choice of where to put a stadium.
Yeah,
exclusive unto itself. It's sharp. The temporary stands look good. The supporter stand has safe standing, which I think is just absolutely amazing, and I would like to see more of across the country. Professional PA system. It's going to look extremely professional there, and I'm sure they'll fill it up a decent amount. I think it fits like 5,000 or so. They claimed there was 1,200 people there for that scrimmage. I don't think there was quite that many at all. But it's going to look really, really good. I just wonder how much of what they're doing is in an effort to look good. Because they're going to hit that. Mm-hmm. But beyond that, I just wonder, it's much like my same argument for the Chattanooga situation, is why do you exist? What are you trying to accomplish? What need or want were you attempting to fill? And that actually kind of brings us all the way back around, because when you see both those clubs come in, the Chattanooga and the Greenville, and again, I don't like to compound them and kind of say that they are one in the same situation, but both of those clubs have continuously used this language of Chattanooga's only professional soccer team, Greenville's first professional soccer team. And that goes back to that pedantic argument of, are you saying this because you pay your players, or are you saying this because the Fed has asked you to meet a certain professional standard and you met that and they allowed you to play in this certain sandbox? So Ben, I know you got to run. Thank you so much for taking time out of your day, for joining us and having a fairly tongue-in-cheek conversation. But I always enjoy these. And again, I truly, truly do believe that as soccer fans, we're not going to grow ourselves. You know, let's put aside trying to grow the game for a little while and just have these uncomfortable conversations where, you know, hopefully we're in an educational situation where if anybody else has ever wondered about these things, maybe we've done a little bit better than a GVL Today four paragraph article.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate you taking the time to talk, and it's always good to talk to you, Tim.
Awesome. We'll chat soon, Ben.
Yep.
I guess that's why they call us the Blues. Time on our hands could be time spent with Bruce. Drinking like tourists, yelling like drunkards, scoring some sunners. We'll win you over. And I guess that's why they call us the Blues.
You've been listening to the You're Smarter Than Us podcast, a proud member of the Soccer and Sweet Tea Network. Check us out on social media at your_smarter, or shoot us an email at yoursmarterthanus@gmail.com.